Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Gancoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I can't tell you how glad I am to be back from Los Angeles and to be back in the San Antonio area again and to be back with all of you here at the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mary Start, the National Political Communications Director of the Constitution Party, will join me in approximately 1 hour from now to talk about all of the latest issues that affect our lives as we approach what would seem to be the beginning of, literally, World War III. Vladimir Putin has had some things to say to President Bush. President Bush has had some things to say to Vladimir Putin. And, of course, the ongoing debate back and forth over Iran and what American policy should be in regard to that country continues to emerge as the key issue of our day, as it would appear that the neocons are going to get their way and that Mr. Cheney is going to get his way, and that there is going to be a preemptive American military action against Iran in coming days or weeks or months. Let us hope that that analysis is wrong. And as far as the No More Wars for Israel conference is concerned, what was really behind the decision to keep that conference out of the Marriott Irvine Hotel in Southern California? Who really put the pressure on the management of the Marriott Irvine to prevent that conference from taking place under the roof of that institution, even though by contract they had agreed to allow it to meet in that particular location? There was something in the Thursday, October the 11th, 2007 Los Angeles Times that is precisely suggestive as to who may have been involved. And in the case of the October 11th article in the Los Angeles Times, it goes back 22 years ago to something that happened that is only now beginning to emerge in terms of ongoing evidence. Evidence emerges in 1985 Santa Ana slaying, according to the Los Angeles Times of October the 11th. Officials say the findings shed new light on bomb plot that killed Arab American Alex Odeb. Greg Krikorian of the Los Angeles Times writes, "Federal and local authorities have uncovered new evidence in the bombing that killed a prominent Arab American civil rights leader in Santa Ana 22 years ago today, in one of the first acts of modern-day terrorism in the United States. The undisclosed evidence, including statements from a now-deceased informant, is not expected to immediately solve the slaying of Alex Odeh, but law enforcement officials familiar with the long-running investigation said the information provided new details about how the attack on the one-time Western Regional Director of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee was planned and carried out. The sources who spoke on condition of anonymity added that the evidence developed in recent months by the FBI and the Los Angeles Police Department in a joint terrorism task force could help investigators eventually bring charges in the case. Quote, it just adds more pieces to a puzzle that we have been trying to put together for years, unquote, one source said. On Wednesday, meaning Wednesday, October the 10th, Odeh's brother Sammy said he was cautiously optimistic that the newly disclosed evidence would finally help solve the killing. Contacted shortly after he had had his first face-to-face meeting with case agents in about 2 years, Sammy Odeh said, quote, they seem to be optimistic about the new evidence, and my reading of that is that it might be significant new information, unquote. Alex Odeh, age 41, was killed and seven people were injured October the 11th, 1985, when a bomb exploded as he opened the door to the committee's Santa Ana office. The attack occurred 12 hours after Odeh appeared on a local television broadcast and criticized the news media for linking the Palestine Liberation Organization to the hijacking of the Italian cruise ship Achille Lauro. Within days of Odeh's death, the FBI said it believed that the militant Jewish Defense League was behind the attack, as well as two other bombings months earlier on the East Coast. We'll be back to look at this Los Angeles Times story of October the 11th, going back again 22 years ago to the Odeh death, and speculating as to what might have been behind the No More Wars for Israel freeze-out at the Marriott Irvine Hotel in Southern California last week in Santa Ana, California. Stay tuned.
Introducing the world's best air purifier. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does in cleaning and purifying the air in your home. Pet, cooking, cigarette, or even cigar smoke is no problem for this air purifier. It's so powerful, it kills molds and mildews as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. There are no moving parts to break, no plates to clean, and no filters to replace. Call 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. Or visit the website now, www.aranair.us. That's www.aranair.us. Again, www.aranair.us.
Take the heat out of your sleep. The Bedfan Personal Cooling System will work for anyone that is a hot sleeper, regardless of the reason. It gives you a deep, restful sleep, the way nature intended. No more tossing and turning. Say goodbye to sleepless nights. So ask yourself, are you a hot sleeper and really want to sleep cooler? A woman who suffers from the effects of menopause, including night sweats derived from hot flashes, have a medical condition that causes your body to get hot at night, or just want to save money on your air conditioning bill? It works instantly. No tools or assembly required. Don't worry. The Bedfan fits short beds, tall beds, beds with footboards, sleigh beds, water beds, and many other types of beds. If you want great relief and total comfort, give us a call at 1-210-632-8280. That's 1-210-632-8280. Or visit our site at bedfan.com. Your provider for great sleep.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our Renewable Energy Solar Program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our Renewable Energy Solar System converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce up to 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year. Is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner on RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
Back. This is Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm very glad to be back from Los Angeles and to be in the San Antonio area again. Also to be back live with you on RBN. And by the way, Bedros Hodgin, who was supposed to be with me a week ago as of tomorrow on this show, live from L.A., is going to hook up with me tomorrow. So we'll still get a chance to hear him. Bedros Hodgin is going to be talking about the Zionist role in the Armenian Genocide. And that, of course, is a contemporary topic that is well worth your time to pay attention to, not simply because of the historical value of it, but also because it's becoming a very, very central issue now in this whole business of what is going on in the Middle East. Many of you will note that during the last week while I was gone in Los Angeles, that there was a lot of renewed international publicity over the fact that the House Foreign Affairs Committee had reported to the floor of the full House a bill which was designed to describe the Turkish role in what happened to the Armenians as genocide. Now, of course, the leadership of the House and the House of Representatives as a whole is becoming increasingly concerned about that move in regard to what the Turks are now threatening to do as it relates to a series of things in the Middle East, up to and including intervening against the Kurds in Iraq, as far as this war is concerned. The Washington Post is reporting on some things this morning related both to Pelosi's indication that the bill that they passed or that they sent to the floor of the House for passage last week may not, as it turns out, come up for a vote, and that Pelosi is thinking better of her own position in regard to the way that she voted on that genocide bill last week. Aside from that, the Washington Post is reporting, of course, that the Turkish parliament has now paved the way in regard to a recent vote of the last 24 to 48 hours for an eventual Turkish incursion militarily into Iraq against the Kurds. What is all of this going to mean for Mr. Bush's situation in the Middle East and also for the neocons? We're going to have to watch that one very, very closely. I might take a closer look at those stories this morning in the Washington Post, because the clock seems to continue ticking toward war in the Middle East. And, of course, now this Armenian genocide bill controversy on both sides of the aisle is potentially just one more spark in the whole situation that may end up producing conflagration. But back to this story in the Los Angeles Times from Thursday, October the 11th, 2007. It was a very strange thing to be in Los Angeles and to receive an emergency phone call last week from Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross and of the American Free Press, indicating that the conference that was scheduled for the Marriott Irvine Hotel there in Santa Ana might not, in fact, occur. Mark went on to tell me that there was incredible pressure that had been placed upon the management of the Marriott Irvine Hotel there in Southern California, right near the John Wayne International Airport in Santa Ana, to keep this conference from happening. Who was behind that pressure? And, of course, we're talking about something where there was a signed contract and where the folks who were involved in this conference had a right to be there. We're told that they could be there, and where everything had been put in order in regard to the hotel arrangements and the conference room arrangements and so forth and so on. All of a sudden, Mark Glenn was being told by these people at the Marriott Irvine that they were not going to honor the contract that had been arrived at. Who was behind that pressure on the Marriott Irvine Hotel there in Santa Ana? Interesting that the same day that Mark Glenn called me to tell me about this emergency situation, I was telling him about this article that I'm now reading to each and every one of you over the air. Coming from the Los Angeles Times of Thursday, October the 11th, which is the day that Mark called me to tell me about this emergency, I in turn was telling him that there was new evidence, according to the LA Times, that had emerged from this 1985 bomb plot that had killed Arab-American activist Alex Odeh. And when you read what happened to Mr. Odeh right there in Santa Ana, California, it's entirely suggestive of some of the forces that may have been at work in regard to the decision last week reached by the Marriott Irvine Hotel. Going back to what happened to Alex Odeh in 1985, 22 years later, we're continuing to find out additional information as to who and what was behind his death. Within days of his death, says the Los Angeles Times, the FBI said it believed the militant Jewish Defense League was behind the attack, as well as two other bombings months earlier on the East Coast. The link, authorities said at the time, involved the explosive devices used in all three incidents. The Jewish Defense League was founded in 1968 by Meir Kahane, a Brooklyn rabbi who moved to Israel in 1970 and founded the Koch Party, which called for forcibly removing all Arabs from Israel and the occupied territories. He was assassinated in New York in 1990 by an Arab extremist. After the FBI's comments about the JDL and the Odeh investigation, JDL leader Irv Rubin called the alleged link, quote, absurd, obscene, and outrageous, unquote, and accused the FBI of slander. But even as the Bureau later softened its public comments linking the JDL to the attack, its investigation continued to center on the possibility that members of the organization knew more than they were admitting about who had planned and carried out the attacks. Over the years, in fact, the FBI focused on several one-time JDL members in its investigation of Odeh's death. In 2005, former JDL member Earl Krugel was sentenced to 20 years in federal prison for plotting to bomb a Culver City mosque and the field office of U.S. Representative Daryl E. Issa, who is an Arab American. Rubin was also charged in the bomb plot. As part of the plea agreement, Krugel promised to help federal authorities in the ODEA investigation and was said to have provided the names of several people mentioned by JDL leader Rubin as being involved in the bomb plot. One source close to the probe told the Los Angeles Times in 2005 that three of the people were former JDL members Keith Fuchs, Andy Green, and Robert Manning, all of whom had been publicly identified as possible suspects in the case as far back as 1988. Fuchs and Green are believed to be living in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Manning is serving a life prison term in California for the 1980 letter bomb slaying of Patricia Wilkerson, a Manhattan Beach secretary who was killed when she opened a package intended for her boss, who prosecutors said was having a business dispute with a JDL member. Less than 2 months after he was sentenced to prison in Phoenix, Krugel was slain by a fellow prisoner. Former JDL leader Rubin died in November of 2002 after leaping from a balcony at the Federal Metropolitan Detention Center, where both he and Krugel had been held since their arrest in December of 2001. Authorities termed Rubin's death a suicide. After more than 2 decades of waiting for the crime to result in charges, Sami Odeh said he tried not to think about the possibility that his brother's killers will never be identified. Quote, "I have been waiting so long for this crime to be solved," unquote, he said, noting that Alex Odeh now has 5 grandchildren who, quote, "miss seeing their grandpa," unquote. Sami Odeh said, "We realize that solving this case will not bring him back, but it will bring us closure," unquote. This occurs in the Thursday, October the 11th, 2007, Los Angeles Times. It's entitled, "New Evidence Emerges in 1985 Bomb Plot in Santa Ana, California." This bomb plot was right in the general location of the of where the No More Wars for Israel conference was scheduled to be held last week near the Marriott Irvine Hotel. Is this a coincidence? Perhaps it is, but suffice it to say that we can certainly identify one issue for sure, and it is that as the weights of the arguments in this present-day situation in the Middle East continue to be on the side of those who argue against the ongoing support of everything that Israel does in the Middle East, who continue to argue that the Iraq war is a catastrophe, who continue to argue that the United States has no business attacking Iran, all of the weights of those arguments, it seems to me, on their merits are in favor of those who take these positions. Therefore, the other side, the pro-Zionist, pro-neocon side, has to resort to all kinds of things, including intimidation and character assassination and even criminal violence as a means of getting their point across. What does that say about who has the strength of the merit of the arguments? I think quite clearly the strength of the merit of the arguments is all in favor of those who indicate that peace and negotiation and diplomacy are virtually always preferable to war, especially when one is talking about going to war in a circumstance where the moral arguments and the legal arguments and the constitutional arguments do not favor one's own position. This is my final take on the No More Wars for Israel conference, although I would also like to say that we need to be encouraging Mark Glennon these days ahead. He has really been through the ringer with some very, very tough things in recent days and recent weeks, many of which I cannot go into over the air. But he was the point person for this conference and just went through nightmarish things prior to its taking place, as well as in its immediate aftermath. And as I said to Mark Glenn, who is, like myself, is a Christian, I said, "Mark, this conference and everything that surrounds it, again, reminds us that we are dealing with a circumstance where we are not wrestling with flesh and blood, to quote the Apostle Paul in Ephesians chapter 6, but we are wrestling with powers, with principalities, with the rulers of the darkness of this present age, and with spiritual wickedness in high places. We do not wrestle with these things at all well, folks, when we do so alone. We do so only when we take on the full armor of God and fight these battles according to God's methods and God's terms and with God's leading." We'll be back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Have you ever considered purchasing storable foods? Well, now is the time to do so and take advantage of Ready Reserve Foods pre-special, pre-oil shortage, pre-drought, pre-bank collapse, pre-housing collapse, pre-dollar collapse, pre-economic collapse, pre-martial law, pre-war, possibly nuclear, pre-bird flu special, and your order will be shipped within 7 business days, not months like some food brokers. Ready Reserve manufactures the food we sell, and we have done so continuously for over 35 years. Call 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com. We produce only the best in storable foods, all from the USA. 1-800-453-2202. Prepare yourself and family for some rough and bumpy times. 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Sure glad to be back in San Antonio again and to be with all of you live with RBN. Bedros Hajin will join me tomorrow. He's going to be talking about the Zionist role in the Armenian Holocaust, or the Armenian genocide of 1915 through 1917. I think you will look forward to that show. That will give, by the way, Mark Glenn a needed rest this Friday. It will also give Father Martinez a rest, and I will bring both of them back on the show a week from tomorrow. But I thought it would be a good idea to give Mark Glenn a Friday off after everything that he's been through in these last couple of weeks. So Bedros Hajin will join me tomorrow live to discuss this whole business of the Armenian genocide and the Zionist role in what happened between 1915 and 1917. I'm sure that you will enjoy that show. By the way, last night I was teaching a class on apocalyptic literature at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in San Antonio. And as we began to look at the whole business of the book of Revelation, I was outlining all of the different schools of thought that have governed the interpretation of this book. And, of course, there you get into the preterist view, the historicist view, the futurist view, and so forth and so on, the idealist view. And then you get into questions like amillennialism, premillennialism, historic premillennialism, dispensational premillennialism, postmillennialism. And then when it comes to the premillennial school of thought, especially the dispensational brand, you get into the various views of the pre, mid, and post-tribulational raptures. Now, without getting into all of that morass of terminology this morning, much less trying to do any justice at all to all of these different positions in history, I was telling the class last night that there are certain things that are often missed by those who get into the technicalities of the debates between all of these different schools of thought historically. One of the things that is often missed is that there are certain things in the book of Revelation that should speak to everyone, that should minister to everyone, regardless of what school of thought you happen to have in regard to how the book should be interpreted, and so forth and so on. One possible place to turn is found in Revelation chapter 1, verse 9, where the Apostle John, of course, is in exile on the island of Patmos off the west coast of Turkey, modern Turkey, what was known as Asia Minor. He was placed there by the emperor, a Roman emperor, Domitian, who reigned from 81 to 96 AD. Domitian, of course, exiled the Apostle John to Patmos because John was not going on with Domitian's emperor worship cult. Think about that one, folks. That ought to be a warning to John Hagee and a few of these other people who seem to be interested in mixing biblical Christianity with power and empire. It seems to me that this whole business of emperor worship, which a lot of people have gotten into in the Republican Party and on the Christian right when it comes to George W. Bush, is something that the Bible warns us about historically, both with people like Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel, as well as Domitian in the book of Revelation. But in Revelation chapter 1, verse 9, we are told as follows by the biblical writer, John, your brother and companion, in the suffering and kingdom and patient endurance that are ours in Jesus, was on the island of Patmos because of the word of God and the testimony of Jesus. Won't say anything more about that verse, Revelation chapter 1, verse 9, except to say to people like Mark Lynn today that I think it speaks to all of us in regard to the fact that when it comes to the kingdom of God, we are all brothers and companions in the suffering and the kingdom and the patient endurance that are ours in Jesus Christ. We suffer, don't we, when we deal with some of these matters that Mark was dealing with in the last couple of weeks out there in Los Angeles. We also need patient endurance. This is true for all of us today, across the political spectrum, and across the theological spectrum as well. We are all, in one sense of the word, brothers and companions in suffering. We also need patient endurance for the things that we are involved with at the present time, because once again, we are not wrestling with flesh and blood. We are struggling with powers and with principalities, with the rulers of the darkness of this present realm, and with spiritual wickedness in high places. This, I think, should be the final take for all of us who are involved in those things politically and spiritually and theologically that involve the deepest things of God at this particularly pivotal time in history. So we should not be surprised when we are subjected to the kinds of things that this conference was subjected to in Southern California last week. And when you think of people like Mark Glenn and Michael Collins Piper and Hesham Talawi, who are in the forefront of fighting for your freedom and mine, we need not be surprised when some of these gentlemen come under the degree of attack that they do. But really encourage Mark Glenn here in coming days with personal notes. Send him your financial support to the extent that you can in regard to this whole business of this conference. He and his family need your renewed encouragement and support, for they have once again been through some incredibly difficult times in these last couple of weeks. Let's move on then to some other news stories. Ron Paul, of course, is beginning to be subjected to the sort of thing that you and I indicated that he would be subjected to all along. Thomas B. Edsel has something in the Huffington Post entitled, "To His Dismay, Ron Paul is Becoming a Magnet for White Supremacists. Is this the beginning of a longer-range plan of the mainstream media to knife Congressman Paul in the back. We'll take a look at it when we come back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio.
Because you can handle the truth.
The Healing Formula is an all-natural, patent-pending wound and skin care formula developed mainly for the treatment of pressure sores and diabetic ulcers. The formula was developed by a home caregiver with more than 30 years' experience. We use the finest ingredients available, including certified organic aloe vera gel with all the beneficial enzymes intact and food-grade hydrogen peroxide. The Healing Formula works from the inside out, oxygenating the affected area, stopping the spread of infection, and decreasing pain while promoting healing. Call 1-800-357-2944 or visit HealingFormula.com. The Healing Formula has proven effective in other areas of skin care as well, such as abrasions, rashes, and the treatment of pyorrhea, gingivitis, ear infections, and much more. The Healing Formula comes with an unconditional money-back guarantee if you're not completely satisfied. We offer a free sample to all nursing homes, home caregivers, and nurses. It is our sincere hope that the Healing Formula will help you or your loved ones to avoid any more unnecessary pain. Call 1-800-357-2944 or visit HealingFormula.com.
The Berkeelite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeelite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeelite is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeelite, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web 24 hours a day at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. If you have any questions or concerns today, you can give me a call at 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. Back to this whole question of Ron Paul this morning. Thomas B. Edsel, of course, now writes for the Huffington Post. He is the political editor of the Huffington Post. From 1981 through 2006, he was a political reporter for the Washington Post, which is where I first became acquainted with him, of course. But he has an article with the Huffington Post that's entitled, "To His Dismay, Ron Paul Becoming a Magnet for White Supremacists." The article is dated October the 15th. Interesting article because it's going to provoke a lot of controversy and debate on the right. It already has in regard to the reader comments coming into Mr. Edsel from various quarters that have taken a look at this essay. But suffice it to say that what we could be seeing, is the same sort of thing beginning to happen with Ron Paul that Pat Buchanan was subjected to, both in 1992 and in 1996. I don't know how many of you remember those campaigns or the media coverage of Pat Buchanan that ensued both in 92 and in 96, but it was almost predictable that as Buchanan began to make some headway in Republican primary challenges and caucuses and so forth, that the media would begin to frame Pat Buchanan in a particular way. In Pat's case, of course, the anti-Zionist orientation of his candidacy led to a situation where the mainstream press and also the neocon right press began to demonize him as a closet Klansman, began to demonize him as somebody who was consorting with all kinds of allegedly dark and nefarious forces on the far fringe right in the United States. That was the way in which his campaign was spun by Newsweek and U.S. News and World Report, also by Time. Not a coincidence that there was a single week when Buchanan appeared on the cover of all three of those news magazines. Talk about news control, talk about media control, there's a classic example of it. The other thing, of course, is that at the same time that Time and Newsweek and U.S. News and World Report were doing their thing with Mr. Buchanan, Bill Buckley's National Review was chipping in at the same time. Now here we see an article appearing under the pen of Thomas B. Edsel, formerly of the Washington Post, that indicates that Ron Paul is becoming a magnet for white supremacists. I want to read this article because it's quite thought-provoking, whatever you think of it. Through no fault of his own, says Mr. Edsel, Representative Ron Paul's anti-globalist, anti-government campaign for the Republican presidential nomination has become a magnet of neo-Nazi networks, pulling in activists and supporters from the fringe white nationalist community where anti-Semitism, anti-black, and anti-immigrant views are commonplace. In some cases, says Edsel, these internet-based activists acknowledge that even though the Paul campaign does not have a racist or anti-Semitic agenda, it can serve as a vehicle to find sympathizers and to recruit new loyalists drawn to the Republican congressman's opposition to international trade agreements, federal police authority, and to the income tax. Such web-based organizations as Stormfront, Vanguard News Network, and the Nationalist Coalition have become sources of support for Paul's bid for the Republican nomination, and in some cases have set up separate Ron Paul discussion groups. The Paul campaign dismissed the pro-Paul activities among these groups. Quote, "We don't know who these people are," said Jesse Benton, Paul's communications director. "Their support has nothing to do with Ron Paul and what he stands for. His message of freedom, peace, and prosperity, that's why people support him," unquote. Paul has not made racist or anti-Semitic appeals to the controversial organizations and their members. Instead, their support is based on Paul's libertarian opposition to government generally, including the IRS and the powers granted to the federal government under the Patriot Act, views that are shared by many on the conservative fringe of the spectrum. In the 2000 campaign, Pat Buchanan appealed to many similar individuals and organizations. Buchanan had a history of expressing views that were often interpreted as anti-Semitic. Writing on the Vanguard News Network, White will, quote-unquote, argue that, quote, "Folks, get involved in the Ron Paul revolution and work with political activists in your communities who are attracted to his anti-globalist message. Most of you would be surprised at how many good people can be exposed to a, let's say, pro-majority message among the remarkable groundswell of fed-up, mostly white Ron Paul supporters, many early on from the 9/11 truth movement. They are finding their backbones as they are exposed to more and more hidden truths, especially about the hidden hand of Jewry behind every foul venture," unquote. Among those backing Paul this year is John J. Ubele, the National Coalition's operations manager. In an emailed reply to an inquiry, Ubele said, quote, "I know that Ron Paul is not a white separatist or a white nationalist. However, he is the most honest and responsible of all the presidential candidates, and that is why I support his candidacy," unquote. The National Coalition is one of a number of splinter groups that formed after the death of William Luther Pierce, author of the Turner Diaries, and founder of the now-fractured National Alliance. The Turner Diaries were considered crucial, says Thomas B. Edsel, to the thinking of Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh. On a Stormfront discussion thread in the Paul campaign, the Ron Paul Revolution, one contributor wrote in, quote, "Not standing up for Ron Paul against the un-American Jewish media and neocons who will do anything to stop his nomination is like not standing up to the efforts to force integration, to encourage mass non-white immigration, or to the attack on the USS Liberty," unquote. Ron Paul is not a white nationalist. His libertarian policies will also conflict with National Socialism, something that a good number of Stormfront members support. However, he is the least toxic candidate by leaps and bounds, unquote, wrote a contributor identified as concerned human, quote, unquote. A minority of the contributors to white nationalist websites, says Edsel, insist on rigid adherence to their racial views, quote, "Anything less than all is nothing. If anything's priority is not 100% the survival of the white race, then it is a problem and not a solution. Ron Paul's priority is not 100% the survival of the white race, so he is an enemy and a burden just as much as any Jew," unquote, wrote, quote, "Comjo, Pan-Aryan insurgent," unquote. Edsel says that the white nationalist and anti-Semitic support flowing to the Paul campaign reflects one of the difficulties facing candidates who do not fall into the midstream, that often their views on less controversial subjects like trade and the power of the federal government to take property through eminent domain also appeal to extremist groups. This is what Thomas B. Edsall has written at the Huffington Post. Of course, Thomas B. Edsall is the political editor of the Huffington Post and formerly from 1981 to 2006 was a political reporter at the Washington Post. This is a most interesting piece of journalism because there are many people on the right who have concerns about some of the organizations listed in Mr. Edsel's essay. And yet by the same token, it seems to me interesting that it is right at this particular juncture in time that such an essay appears after the success of Ron Paul in raising money in the last quarter, for which we now have Federal Election Commission statistics. This would suggest that potentially Mr. Paul is in fact going to be subjected to the same type of thing ongoingly that characterized Pat Buchanan. Now, interestingly enough, of course, Pat Buchanan, I think, was clearer on the Israel issue than Ron Paul, at least at this particular point in Mr. Paul's candidacy. So Buchanan was a far earlier target of those who were raising the specter of so-called anti-Semitism. Thomas B. Edsel has been very, very careful not to characterize Ron Paul as a racist or a white supremacist or an anti-Semite because, of course, the congressman is none of those things. But simply in raising the specter of those who may be, in fact, on their own operating to support the Paul candidacy, Edsel, of course, raises the specter of concerns and issues and mental images which may be designed to hurt Ron Paul's presidential candidacy. We need to be very clear, folks, about what's happening here, very clear about the fact that when Ron Paul talks about the federal income tax, when he talks about the Federal Reserve Board, when he talks about the disaster of neoconservative foreign policy, that he can do so and do so with integrity without in any way, shape, or form being linked to what many would call anti-Semitism or racism or anti-black or anti-legitimate immigrant views. This is going to be a very, very interesting phenomenon to see how this whole thing plays out in the days ahead. But this, of course, presents a minefield for Congressman Paul that thus far he has negotiated his way through very, very skillfully. Having said that, we need to say as well that we need to be watching very, very closely for evidence that what today appears in the Huffington Post might soon become standard fare in Newsweek and Time and U.S. News and World Report if those publications decide that it's time to begin demonizing this very fine congressman from Texas, who, as far as I'm concerned, is the only legitimate presidential candidate in the race. So let's watch this whole thing very, very closely, see where it leads, and entrust that in the days ahead, Ron Paul continues to make progress and does so in a vein which cannot be dampened, which cannot be stopped by what could become a very, very concerted media effort to get him in the days and weeks ahead. The whole business of Vladimir Putin going to Tehran recently I want to maybe spend some more time with that subject in the next couple of days. The London Financial Times has a major spread on the Putin-Ahmadinejad visit. I was talking on this subject with some Persian friends of mine in Los Angeles in the last week for their own take as to what this meeting might mean. Of all places, the World Socialist website has a very, very interesting story by Peter Simons entitled "Putin in Tehran, the U.S.-Russia Rift Widens." This World Socialist website essay by Mr. Simons is most fascinating because if you compare it to some of the things that are being said by the responsible right in regard to Mr. Putin's trip to Tehran, one will discover that there is a tremendous amount of overlap between what the World Socialist website is posting with Peter Simons this morning and what has been said in recent days by people like Ron Paul and Pat Buchanan. Peter Simons says that the visit by Russian President Vladimir Putin to Tehran this week has underscored the deepening gulf between Moscow and Washington on a range of issues, in particular the Bush administration's threat of war against Iran over its nuclear programs. Putin ignored pressure from the U.S. to call off the trip, the first by a Russian or Soviet leader since Stalin's wartime conference with Churchill and Roosevelt in Tehran in 1943. The decision amounted to a diplomatic slap in the face to the Bush administration, which has been pressing for the UN Security Council to adopt a third resolution imposing tougher sanctions aimed at further isolating Iran. Nominally, Putin was in Tehran to attend a meeting of the five Caspian Sea states, Russia, Iran, Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, and Kazakhstan. The Russian president used the platform, however, to oppose military aggression against Iran, quote, "Not only should we reject the use of force, but also the mention of force as a possibility. This is very important. We must not submit to other states in the case of aggression or some other kind of military action directed against one of the Caspian countries," unquote, he said. Putin's rejection of the, quote, "the mention of force as a possibility," unquote, is a reference to U.S. President Bush's repeated warnings that all options are on the table, quote, unquote, in relation to Iran. That is, including military force. Given his government's brutal war in Chechnya, Putin's attempts to posture as a man of peace are no more credible than Bush's denials that he is threatening Iran, according to Peter Simons. Behind all their verbal sparring are the conflicting economic and strategic interests of American and Russian capitalism in Central Asia and the Middle East. At Putin's instigation, says Simons, the Tehran meeting adopted a declaration pledging that member states would not allow, quote, "any country to use their soil for a military attack against any of the Caspian Sea littoral states," unquote. The obvious aim is to block the U.S., which has not only threatened Iran, but has established military relations with a number of Central Asian countries, particularly Azerbaijan. Under the umbrella of NATO, the U.S. has helped to arm and train the Azeri military, upgrade a former Soviet air base, and build an Azeri naval presence on the Caspian Sea. CIA Director General Michael Hayden flew into Baku for an unannounced visit on September the 28th, fueling speculation that Azerbaijan was being pressured to assist in U.S. war plans against Iran, a role previously rejected by the Azeri government. Since the collapse of the former Soviet Union, says Simons, Central Asia has become an area of intense major power rivalry, with smaller, newly independent countries like Azerbaijan engaged in a delicate balancing act. The Caspian Sea alone is estimated to have oil reserves of up to 49 billion barrels, about half that of the major oil producer Kuwait, and 230 trillion cubic feet of gas. Putin sought to use the Tehran meeting to stymie U.S. plans to build a pipeline across the Caspian Sea to Azerbaijan, which would bypass the existing Russian pipeline network and undermine Russia's clout in Central Asia. Putin also pointedly backed Iran's nuclear program, declaring, quote, "Russia is the only country that is helping Iran to realize its nuclear program in a peaceful way," unquote. The meeting of Caspian states reaffirmed that all signatories to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which includes Iran, quote, "have the right to generate and utilize nuclear energy for peaceful purposes," unquote. Iran has rejected U.S. allegations that it is planning to build nuclear weapons and insisted on its right under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty to build a uranium enrichment plant. Putin, says Simons, stopped short of announcing a date for the completion of Iran's nuclear power reactor, which is being built by Russian companies. Moscow has previously used a dispute over payment to drag out the project and pressure Iran to comply with UN resolutions. While not relinquishing this lever, Putin exploited his trip to Tehran to the Hill to send a message to Washington that Moscow was not about to allow the United States to trample on vital Russian interests in the region. He very publicly met with Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who is increasingly being demonized in the U.S. media, and invited him to make a return visit to Moscow. The growing gulf between Washington and Moscow, says Simons, has been on open display over the past week in Putin's meetings with top U.S. officials and European leaders. French President Nicolas Sarkozy flew to Moscow last week in an effort to convince Putin to support a new round of U.N. sanctions against Iran and to end Russian opposition to U.S. and European-backed proposals for establishing Kosovo as an independent state. Moscow has consistently opposed growing Western influence in the Balkans and supported traditional ally Serbia in insisting that Kosovo remain a Serbian province. Sarkozy's efforts failed on both issues. In what amounted to public dressing down, Putin declared at their joint press conference on October the 10th, quote, "We have no objective evidence to claim that Iran is pursuing nuclear weapons, which makes us believe that the country has no such plans," unquote. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Attention RBN listeners who have trouble sleeping. If you have tried everything and still have serious problems getting a good night's sleep, then this message is going to be the single most important one you'll ever hear, and here's why. 77 RBN listeners are needed immediately to test a new, alternative method of falling asleep fast. And the best part is, this new sleep system produces dramatic results when everything else has failed, including prescription sleeping pills. You see, it works in a whole new way, utilizing special sleep frequencies to almost command your brain to fall asleep fast. And it's easy to use. Yet, because the rules governing medicine in the U.S., no health or healing claims can be made for the sleep system. However, it's still legal to own this new high-speed sleep generator, and 77 RBN listeners are invited to use this system first, before the general public. So, if you're really having trouble falling asleep, simply go to www.highspeedsleep.com. That's highspeedsleep.com, or call 877-327-0365 and tell the operator you listen to RBN. Again, that's 877-327-0365.
Introducing the world's best air purifier. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does in cleaning and purifying the air in your home. Pet, cooking, cigarette, or even cigar smoke is no problem for this air purifier. It's so powerful, it kills molds and mildews as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. There are no moving parts to break, no plates to clean, and no filters to replace. Call 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. Or visit the website now, www.aranair.us. That's www.aranair.us. Again, www.aranair.us.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Mark Gant, Cross America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I hope to have a hookup with Mary Starrett, the National Political Communications Director of the Constitution Party, in approximately 6 minutes from now. I would like to thank Mary Starrett for all the work that she did for me during my trip to Los Angeles. She subbed for me on at least three occasions, and looking through the show descriptions, had some very, very interesting guests on the show in my absence, including my old friend Howard Phillips. Mary Starrett, of course, is one of the really top people, in my judgment, in the American conservative movement. And she's not only a very, very fine person and a very, very ideologically sound individual, but, of course, with her professional media background, I'm sure that all of you enjoyed having her on this show in my absence. She has a long-time background with both Christian radio and secular media, print, television, and radio up in the Pacific Northwest, and I'm sure that that served all of us in good stead during the period of time that I was out in Los Angeles for the No More Wars for Israel conference. Speaking of some other things that are going on in the mainstream press in the last couple of minutes before Mary hopefully joins us, did you notice today on page one of the Washington Post that the Senate and Bush have agreed on the terms of a spying bill? Here's the key idea in the story, and it's found in the first paragraph. Jonathan Wiseman and Ellen Nakashima have penned this for the Washington Post today. Senate Democrats and Republicans reached agreement with the Bush administration yesterday on the terms of new legislation to control the federal government's domestic surveillance program, which includes, listen to this, folks, which includes a highly controversial grant of legal immunity to telecommunications companies that have assisted the program, according to congressional sources. What's the meaning of this? Obviously, the telecommunications companies are legally exposed because they were doing some things with the records of their customers that were illegal and unconstitutional. And therefore, when they were caught, and when the degree of their exposure to what the National Security Agency was doing finally reached the American press, of course, the formulation of some class action lawsuits began to stir out there on the horizon against these telecommunications companies. The United States Senate has now come to an agreement with the Bush administration in regard to some new legislation that, if passed, would include, according to the Washington Post, a highly controversial grant of legal immunity to telecommunications companies that have assisted the program, according to congressional sources. Keep an eye on that one. It's entirely predictable, entirely laughable in one sense of the word, that such a thing could transpire. But at another level, it shows the extent to which we are up against it all when it comes to the fight to preserve our most fundamental liberties. Another interesting story on page 9 of this morning's Washington Post. The Air Force faux pas in the August 29th, August 30th bent spear incident covered by Mark Lynn at the American Free Press. The Washington Post now reports this morning on page 9 that tough punishment is expected for warhead errors. Air Force officers may lose commands after nuclear missiles were flown on bomber. This is Mark Gancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
With recent